Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to talk to you for the next, I don't know, as long as we can last. We're both extremely sick, but we wanted to deliver like we always do and talk about the weekend's results. We got a UFC fight night headlined by Max Holloway and Yair Rodriguez to cover. Of course, Bellator 271 had their headline card, headlined by Chris Cyborg and Sinead Kavanaugh. So we'll talk about those, the latest news. Bear with us, folks, but we're going to deliver like we always do on a Monday here. It's November 15th. All right, so a lot of you know we lost a dear friend, Steve Straub, a few years ago. Today's the 2-year anniversary, so we want to dedicate the show to him. I think about the guy a lot. He was just a guy that I grew up with, and on top of that, he lived in Vegas. So there was no reason why we shouldn't be texting or talking to each other at least once a day. So, you know, he, like I say, he's definitely missed. Part of me left when he left, goes, you know, a little percent left with me when he left, and Uncle Lugo and a few of the dear ones from our close circle of family and friends.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that when these situations come up, they're like, that's when you realize just how big of an impact somebody has on your life. You know, it's, you want to realize that when they're still alive and appreciate them. But for me, it's like the day is obviously a reminder, but also the time period. This is when UNLV basketball starts up. And we would always go to like the first couple games or something. And you know, he's not here to do that anymore. So they had their first game this week, or they've had two games. And that was kind of like the beginning of the reminder. It's going to be, you know, a tough month with the holidays and all that, but he's just really, really missed.
Definitely. But not forgotten. Excuse me. All right, so let's recap what happened this weekend. Over Bellator 271, they went on Friday. Chris Cyborg defeated Sinead Kavanaugh in the first round via TKO. A right hook is what did the damage. Put her down. Now Chris Cyborg has yet another title defense to add to her legacy. She's been a champion over at the UFC, Invicta, Strikeforce, now Bellator. And what can I say about her? She is obviously a Hall of Famer. Is she the GOAT? Probably not, only because somebody else just happens to be just as hot as her in terms of what they've done, and they hold that head-to-head over Chris Cyborg. So Chris Cyborg's kind of done more across more promotions for a longer time. But that head-to-head, you know, you can't forget it. So she would need probably for somebody that she's beaten to beat Amanda Nunes to create some sort of a round robin. And then maybe we can have that sort of a discussion. I don't know. That one will always be tough, and it'll probably eat Chris Cyborg up. But Chris didn't do anything about it because I thought she could have stuck around and asked for that rematch. She wouldn't have wanted that one.
Can she do it, though, without beating Amanda Nunes? Like, let's just say, you know, Amanda's been kind of clear that she doesn't have that many left in her as well. If Amanda were to retire, say, in 2 or 3 fights, and Chris just keeps on going, maybe beats a Kayla Harrison along the way, is there anything she can do to do it without just straight up head-to-head with Amanda?
I don't think so. I think you could say she's the most accomplished fighter ever, one of the greatest ever. She's on the Mount Rushmore. But the greatest ever, like when you lock up all the experts in a room and you say, you don't leave until you give us an answer. Start throwing stats at the wall. Start the discussions. A lot of them are going to come back to that fight, you know, and that fight is a difference maker. Mm-hmm. There isn't one of these Fedor versus Randy's back in the day. They never fought, but well, what did each one do to to their respective promotions, you know? Who did they have in common? You know, that one is a little bit easier when you do it that way. Someone might have five losses. The other one might have two, but the one with five losses has better wins, longer streaks, more title defenses. I don't know, but, you know, Amanda's been a beast across two different divisions. Maybe not. Maybe that's where she can say, well, I kind of didn't go to the different promotions out there and cause damage, but I did do it across two divisions, and I defended them both, and I beat you, and that's just tough to get away from.
You think at some point, maybe at the end of her career, if bare knuckle's still around, she might just do it just to win another title?
Yeah.
I think so, too. Yeah,
she can do that. And that wouldn't be a ridiculous suggestion. You know, that could be brought up to her in an interview, and I don't think she would shoot it down. That's right down her alley. We'll see. But for now, 25-2, still the Bellator champ. Good on Chris. Linton Vassell took out Terrell Fortune. Terrell Fortune had been saying during the week, man, have these old dudes fight each other. They're kind of not necessarily clogging up the division, but you can tell some of the young guys from the older guys, like, you're not sure what Bellator wanted to do. And I'm talking about back when they had, you know, Mir, who's no longer with them, Nelson, who's no longer with them, your Barnetts, Caritana, Fedors, all those. And then you had your younger guys like Fortune, Bader, maybe even Minnikoff might be more of those, one of those guys as well, Moldovsky, I don't know. But he didn't handle his business. Linton Vassell won, and now Linton Vassell, since moving to heavyweight, I think he's like 3-1, 4-1, so he'll probably make a case to fight Ryan Bader at some point.
Yeah, Linton is kind of quietly taking people out. He's a tough out. He deserves a lot more respect than – he just had this run where I just feel like maybe Bellator used him as a stepping stone for guys. And it worked for a little bit, but he just somehow turned everything around.
Another big fight had Aaron Pico against Justin Gonzalez. Gonzalez was 12-0, coming in with a lot of hype. Of course, Aaron Pico's had a lot of hype for his whole life since he started wrestling as a kid and boxing as a kid. 9-3 overall now. He defeated Justin Gonzalez via decision, but man, he looked good. He looked dominant too.
Yeah, I think this is what everybody has been waiting for, right? Just everything fell into place. Everything looked good. He blended all the arts. This is the guy that I think if you can erase what has happened up until this point, you know, the downfalls that he's had, you would look at this guy and go, holy crap. The same way you look at AJ McKee and you would say this guy can do some damage in other areas as well. So hopefully he can keep that up and get some big wins.
And that's the scary thing, is a lot of what he's doing is similar to AJ McKee, except AJ McKee was passing all those small tests they gave him, and his only – the only backlash against him was, well, he hasn't fought anyone, you know, like they're just giving him cupcakes or whatever. Whereas Pico kind of had some tough fighters from the beginning, and he didn't get past some of them, but he learned. Now that they're on a collision course, the problem is both of them are open about not wanting to fight each other. So we'll have to see what happens. McKee's been open about going to 155, but I would imagine a title defense or two before he does that, no?
Yeah, you have to. You have to kind of establish a little bit of a legacy at featherweight, and then move on. But I think AJ is going to be pretty decent at lightweight as well. So should be good for him.
Yeah. Maybe they'll just have to open up the checkbook a little bit. I really love to see these two fight at featherweight. All right, Arlene Blanco defeated Pam Sorensen. That was probably this one, along with Steve Mowry, now going to 10-0. I only know this because I'm on the Bellator rankings committee. They're big fights for Bellator. Blanco and Sorensen, both obviously contenders in that 145-pound division. So whoever wins, guess what? They get treated to fighting Chris Cyborg. However, Chris Cyborg's kind of been wiping out the division a little bit. So nothing's automatic. Arlene Blanco had her shot about a year ago, something like that. So she's fought her already. That one would have been the preferred. Sorry, not the preferred outcome, I think, for Bellator. I think Pam Sorensen would have been better because Chris hasn't faced her. But it didn't work out that way. So now Arlene Blanco, I mean, she's not concerned with what benefits Bellator, she's concerned with what benefits her. She'll probably have to get into the type of promotion, you know, like I'm better now, you know, I'll give the champ a better fight. You know, I don't know. I don't know what she'll be able to say, but she did her job. Remember, she got choked out in the second round a few years ago, made it to round two, you know, had a decent showing for herself, but she's doing her job kind of like as a contender gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And then lastly, Steve Mowry remains undefeated. He's slowly climbing up the Bellator ranks. He's kind of like more in that window of where Terrell Fortune is, like the lesser known fighters that are doing well for Bellator that could probably be the future. So keep an eye on that guy. And Valley Laredo back in the win column for her. You know, she's different in the sense that she's got skills, but I think everybody knows her as a hottie who can throw down versus as a fighter who happens to look good.
Yeah, she has a little bit of that stigma, but at the same time, she's not doing herself any favors in the mixed martial arts area because she's not making weight. You know, if you don't make weight to your fight, like it helps her that I think her opponent also agreed to that or something. But you just gotta be that. You gotta be a professional. You gotta do that. Because when she gets these victories, she kind of she'll put it out there like, look who's doing this, look who's doing that. But if you don't make weight, like just fighters don't really care, promotions don't care, fans don't care. You gotta get that short up first.
Agreed. All right, let's move over to UFC, which took place the following morning, actually. We started at 10 a.m. here in Las Vegas, 1 p.m. Eastern. And on this one, we'll go from the bottom and work our way to the top. Da Ong Jong defeated Kennedy and Chuck Wu. Rafael Alves defeated Mark Diakise. Courtney Casey defeated Liana Jojoa. Any thoughts on any of those three fights, goes? All of them? Sorry, the first two were finishes. The last one was a decision.
Yeah, the first KO. Honestly, I did pretty bad gambling on this card. I thought Diakise was going to win. I probably went 0-6 or something like that. The only one that I got right was that Casey fight. But early on, I mean, this was a pretty damn good card. This was a lot of fun from top to bottom.
Sean Woodson defeated Colin Angleton. Andrea Lee defeated Cynthia Calvillo. Calvillo, I wouldn't say quit on the stool. From what we're hearing, her corner suggested she not continue to fight. And she agreed. She took the fight on late notice, and she had a broken orbital bone, and she was just heartbroken. So I don't think too many people are giving her too much grief on that one. And even the announcers went out of their way, especially Michael Bisping, to say, hey, look, hold your head up high. That was the right decision. Lastly, Joel Alvarez defeated Thiago Moises. Any thoughts on those three fights, goes?
Yeah, it's a tough situation for Cynthia Calvillo because – on the one hand, you have admiration for her for stepping in on short notice and taking a fight. Considering where she's at in her career right now, she needs wins badly. You know, she needs to be able to get a win and start amounting some sort of streak. And normally, under other circumstances, this might be the perfect scenario for her. But then just getting that the orbital bone broken like that, like you understand the situation. Hopefully the UFC has a little bit of more mercy on her. She's going to need some time off. But, yeah, she's got to get things together. And Andrea Lee, I mean, you got to give her props. She's a fun fighter. She says a lot of good things. I don't know that she's going to have anything for the champion, but she's definitely fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. She says this was the first camp that she did at home and that she was really happy she was able to pull it off. She lives in the South, I think Mississippi. And she travels to California to train with Kieran Fitzgibbons. And so she loves it there. It's nothing against the gym, but she's got a little daughter. And so she wants to be there more for the daughter. So this time that's what she did, and she pulled it off. So she was pretty stoked. Calvillo's a tough out, no matter whether she's fighting a strawweight or flyweight. I still feel like a return to strawweight would probably benefit her a little bit more. And I really wish that Cynthia, who has a really, really good jiu-jitsu game, just commit more to wrestling. Now, that doesn't mean that I think she's not training wrestling. She probably is. But in the fights, she's not doing as much. And there's not just like shoot a double and if you miss, that's it. You can tie someone up against the collar, and there's many different ways that you can get someone to the ground, throw them, trip them, you know, body lock. And I'd like to see her do that, or maybe put her up against the cage, do some chain wrestling, and you know, go through some steps, you know, to grab a single and put her down that way. But commit to it and do it, because on the feet, she's fighting against a girl in this case that's just got more kickboxing experience. And I know the 4-ounce gloves can sometimes even things out a little bit, but you know, sometimes it's just basic strategy. Where am I stronger? Where are they weakest? How do I get there? And I got to commit to it. So, yeah. But I don't want to sound like I'm piling on, because that's a serious injury that she has. And I really applaud her for stepping up on late notice and trying to rectify the loss from a few weeks ago. She took a loss, a recent loss as well, that I bet you she wanted to kind of, you know, correct that. When she lost to Jessica Andrade back in, like, I think it was the day before my birthday at the pay-per-view with Valentina and Lauren Murphy, Volkanovski and Ortega. She lost on that card. So it didn't work out, but she took a gamble, and now she can get through the holidays, get better, and then see where she stands. All respect to Cynthia Calvillo, Joel Alvarez putting Spain on the map. Thiago Moises is a tough out. He was the favorite, but Alvarez comes in with some elbows and uppercuts. He finished him in the first round. Song Yadong defeated Julio Arce. I got that one wrong. But I did think Arce was starting to kind of get going a little bit in the second round. But Song Yadong was a beast. No way around it. Chaos Williams was a beast, too. He defeated Michael Bielsa. He got him in the third round. Any thoughts on those wins?
Yeah, Chaos Williams fight was the one that – well, and the Yadong fight was good, too. Both those fights were really fun to watch, but Chaos Williams, he was taking some shots early on, but Baeza just couldn't get going, and I think the commentators kind of alluded to it, but he just kind of became a little bit predictable, and I think that's how Chaos was able to land that big shot and put him out. And then Yadong was just, yeah, he was just on that night. I got both of those wrong again.
Yeah, and the thing with Baeza, I think what they were alluding to was kind of what put him in the fight, in control of the fight, and that was that calf kick. He was slowing down Williams a lot, but I think he became a little bit too predictable in the way he was throwing it, didn't mix it up enough, and but he definitely was slowing Chaos Williams down. The problem is Chaos Williams is one of those guys that's got dynamite in his hands, even in round three, so you always have to be wary of what he can throw, and he hadn't slowed him down enough. So congratulations to Chaos Williams for hanging in there and then putting him out. Great, great win for him. Baeza now takes two tough losses in a row. He was undefeated coming into the Ponzinibbio fight, a fight he was winning early on. Then this fight, a fight he was winning early on. Now he's 10-2. Felicia Spencer defeated Leah Letson. Leah Letson hadn't fought in almost 3 years. She stopped Spencer from getting the fight to the ground a few times, but then after a while, she couldn't stop her, you know. She showed some decent takedown defense, but Spencer was just relentless. That's kind of how I want Cavillo to fight. And so she had a good gas tank. She was relentless. And then towards the end of the second and the third, she found it easy to put Leah Letson on the ground. One time she swept her and got on top after Letson had taken Spencer down. But good on her, man. She did her thing. Great, great win for Felicia Spencer there at 145 pounds. Marcos Rogério de Lima defeated Ben Rothwell. They said it was a controversial stoppage, I suppose, but I think more in the sense that Herb just could have stopped it when he actually grabbed a hold of de Lima by the waist. Then he let it go as Rothwell had already grabbed a takedown attempt and actually brought de Lima to the ground. Now, would that have changed the course of the fight? 5% chance, maybe. Maybe that at least he clears the cobwebs and gets back to his feet. Maybe the fight changes. I don't know. But I think 95% certain it was already kind of done. And you could tell Rothwell was still a little wobbly. It just added to the controversy that Herb kind of stopped it, let the fight go to the ground, and then de Lima convinced them that Yeah, I'd already stopped it. And Herb said, oh, yeah, you're right.
Well, I always like to side on on the side of caution. But in this particular situation, with a guy like Ben Rothwell that has proven before that he can take a shot and come back, I kind of feel him a little bit on this one. I mean, it's not anything that you could point to and say, Herb's a bad ref, or, you know, it was just unfortunate. You know, had the fight stopped when it stopped, okay. But the way it played out afterwards kind of leaves a little bit of doubt. But Ben did take some shots, some really, really big shots. And I understand both sides of it.
When Herb grabbed him by the waist, if he just pulls him off and it ends there, I don't think anyone has a problem with it. It's the fact that Ben actually did kind of get the fight to the ground, had a good grasp of De Lima, and then De Lima convinced Herb that the fight had already stopped. That's the controversy.
But see, you have to remember, too, the same way we're playing that game, we can also say by Herb trying to grab a hold of De Lima, De Lima kind of paused fighting for about 2 seconds. And in a situation like that, 2 seconds is a lifetime. He could have maybe landed a couple more shots that would have put Ben out. So, I mean, you can like kind of go back and forth on both of them.
Right. So I believe the stoppage was correct in the sense that it's the execution of the stoppage that was bad. Now, basically, if Herb were to say, look, my intention was to stop it, I went for it, and then at the last second regretted my decision. The fighters fell to the ground, but one of the fighters correctly pointed out that I had made my decision, and therefore that's why I stopped it. I would be good with that, especially if he said stop, stop. I don't know if I heard that. If he said stop, stop, then they do that as they're actually, you know, tackling the fighter. But I have said in the past I'd like Herb to be a little bit more decisive. A lot of times you see the way these referees interject. Sometimes they'll kind of bull rush, tackle, or just throw themselves in between the fighter that's causing the damage versus the one that's being damaged with some really, really force. I think I'd like to see that a little bit more from Herb going forward. But other than that, I still think he's one of the top refs. And I all the refs make mistakes, in my opinion. And I just don't know any ref that doesn't. And I don't know that there's like three or four warming up in the minor leagues, we'll call them, ready to step in and do what that guy can do. He's getting in my opinion.
You look at, like, Chris Tione and even Jason Herzog. I mean, like, he's been around, but he's on – I think he's part of that next generation. Mark Smith. I think they're the next group that eventually – you know, we saw Big John leave. If we ever see Herb Dean leave, maybe those guys will start to get elevated a little bit more. But I don't see another generation behind them.
Right, and how many times do you watch – our own eyes, we see in football or basketball what we think is a foul or an out of bounds. Excuse me. And then the replay shows us that we don't know what the hell we're talking about. Mistakes are just going to get made. This is a very, very quick and violent sport. But I kind of have an idea of what Herb was doing, you know, and it's unfortunate he went down that way. But he wanted to stop the fight. Then at the last second, he regretted his decision, but then realized he had already stopped it, and that's why he went forward with it. I don't have a problem with it. It looks sloppy a little bit, but it doesn't make him a bad ref, and the result was correct. And that's that. Now, let's say he doesn't put his arm around De Lima, and the fight hits the ground, and Rothwell's got a hold of De Lima, and now De Lima's got to go to work. I'm fine with that, too. Because, again, Ben Rothwell has proven he can take a lot of damage and come back from a lot of damage. It was just really, really too close to call in so many directions. But I guess my point more than anything is I saw Herb taking a lot of heat online. And I'm telling you, folks, that is not an easy job to do. And there's not many that do it that are infallible. Everyone makes mistakes. So you have to cut them a little slack. I'm telling you, we're in this generation where everyone wants every single thing correct. It ain't going to happen. Look at the Giants and the Dodgers, how that series ended. Mistakes are just going to happen. And you got to trust the ones that are train for these high profile fights, for these high profile events, trust them, and then you got to continuously work on getting some of the younger ones more repetitions so that when the older ones do move on and retire, we have some new ones ready to go.
Yeah, no, I agree.
We get to the main event, Max Holloway versus Yair Rodriguez. Max Holloway is a huge favorite, anywhere from -5, -$600 to Yair's +350, +400. And as soon as the fight started, I was like, oh, shit, we got a live dog. He started kicking really nice to the calves. I knew he had kicks. And as soon as he connected on a few, I was like, that's right. Max does expose his lead leg. We got something here, you know. And he was throwing some nice combos, too, some nice one-twos. So I thought, okay, here's a kickboxer that's throwing some nice hands. He's letting his legs attack. Maybe this is going to be more competitive of a fight than I thought it was going to be. Yair was also working off a long layoff. In the end, it took Holloway a little bit to settle down, and he did, and then his cardio was just better, and he was able to take over the fight. However, going into the fifth, I thought it could be 3-1 Max, 2-2 Yair. Those were the most common things I thought in my head, so I thought round five would make a difference. Yair actually won that round on a couple judges' scorecards, if I'm not mistaken, but it seemed like the earlier rounds, the ones that were kind of close that I was thinking, well, they could go this way, they could go that way, I was wrong about them. The judges didn't really turn in identical scorecards, but in the end, they all had Max winning, and I think everyone was in acceptance of that.
Yeah, 2-3 and 4 is when Max really started to put his foot on the gas a little bit. Yair looked great in round one, but I don't know what that took out of him. Like, I don't understand where Max gets this insane cardio from. Because he doesn't – I don't know where he gets it, but I bet Yair. I thought that he would give him hell in this fight. But I, even though Max Holloway won this fight, I feel like if they fought 10 times, for as good as Yair did in certain parts of the fight, it was just clear that Max Holloway was the better fighter and had an overall better game. The only thing you can do is just kind of tip your cap to Yair and just say, man, you're a tough dude, a badass dude. You did to Max Holloway what a lot of people have failed in doing. He got to him. It just wasn't good enough. And that kind of proves just how good Max Holloway is. And if anything, really like strengthens that case for they're just going to have to do it again, him and Volkanovski, because what that was a good reminder that after Volkanovski, the people below that, Max and Alex are just on a different level. Like Brian Ortega is a great fighter, but look what both of those guys did to him. You know what I mean? He's a really damn good fighter. It's just that the two guys at the top just seem to be menaces right now.
Yeah. I think of some of the situations where we had a clear number two to someone's dominant number one, like Rousey Tate, Johnson Benavidez, maybe now even Usman Covington. It's, you know, those cases usually get shut down pretty easily for a third fight to be run back. But this one, there doesn't seem to be too many people that are in the way of this. Nobody seems to be saying, oh, you can't fight the champ three times. What are you doing? You know, like Holloway's really, really proven himself, look good. And a lot of it also had to do with the fact that the second fight was really, really close. Holloway also had an impressive title reign. So maybe just the right chips fell at the right time while they've been wiping out the rest of the division. You know, everyone's just coming up short or not fighting as much as they should, like Zabit, for example. I think Zabit could have a case if he had been an active fighter, but he hasn't been. So that's that. Round one, two judges had it for Holloway, Cleary and D'Amato. Ron McCarthy had it for Rodriguez. Round two, two judges had it for Holloway, McCarthy and D'Amato. Derek Cleary had it for Rodriguez. Round three, all of them had it for Holloway. Round four, all of them for Holloway. And round five, all of them for Rodriguez. So basically going into round five, one judge, D'Amato, had all four rounds for Holloway. And the other two had three of the four rounds for Holloway. So Rodriguez was drawing dead, as they say in poker. There was nothing he could do to improve his hand and win the fight unless he were to win, I suppose, a 10-8 round. then he could maybe get a draw because he got 10-9. But, yeah, he would need a 10-8 to get a draw, a majority draw, a 10-7, and he wins. I only bring this up because this would have been interesting for open scoring. I don't think Holloway looks up and says, oh, now I'm going to run. He's one of the ones that you really wouldn't have to, you know, fear this outcome. But I think in most cases, the strategy would change, and that's why we bring it up from time to time when it applies, just to see if whether it would have changed the outcome of the fight or not. I don't know. But congratulations to Max Holloway. He looked good, and so did Yair. And Yair got a lot of respect from a lot of people, and hopefully now he comes back and fights more frequently.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, him and Zabit, you know, you want to see some of these guys working harder. That's a really good division, really, when you look at it. It just sucks that at the very top, it's just so top-heavy with those two guys that just seem to be so dominant in Volkanovski and Holloway.
Roman deletes, and Kyle Daukaus got pulled at the last minute, removed due to COVID protocols. And the bonuses went to Holloway and Rodriguez for fight of the night. Baeza got a performance of the night. Chaos Williams did for finishing Baeza. And Andrea Lee got a performance bonus of the night for her win over Cynthia Calvillo. They only had four bonuses. Sometimes they've been stepping it up and having like five or six or whatever. And trust me, there was some really, really nice finishes out there that may have qualified, you know, to get the extra 50 Gs. So hopefully Dana at least opens up the checkbook and sends them something. Because overall, like Ghost said, it was a great fight night.
Yeah, no, it was a good fight. A good card overall.
Yeah. All right, folks, listen, we're going to cut it a little short. I'm absolutely dying over here. There's nothing really, really huge in terms of news that we just can't cover on Thursday or hasn't been beaten to death, you know, from our website, social media. You know, we have a lot of great writers that I'm sure a lot of you follow, and they put up pieces or they have opinions that they share on social media. Check it out. Let that hopefully get you through until we come back on Thursday and we can talk about it a little bit. But thank you, as always, for your support. It means a lot. Sorry we just – you know us. We used to do this daily for 2 hours. Sometimes go even a little longer. But right now this is a brutal cold. This is my second cold in 3 weeks, so I'm not a big fan of this year's strains of flu or common colds or coronavirus or whatever the hell is going on. This is no fun, man. I'm a joke right now. But anyway, we are out of here. Go out there and be a champion. We'll talk to you soon.